Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network is proud to present Leonard Lopate at Large, lively hour-long in-depth discussions providing overviews and context to topics usually covered in partial measures. His guests include leading thinkers, scientists, artists, economists, farmers, historians, authors, and politicians. Mr. Lopate is a Peabody Award winner whose numerous honors include 3 Associated Press Awards and 3 James Beard Awards.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. We regularly invite industrial hygienist Monona Russell to the show to answer your questions about environmental health issues like toxins in pesticides, whether organic products are really safer than non-organic, or the dangers of mold. But she joins us now to talk about 2 increasingly popular practices, tattooing and vaping. And she'll be taking your calls on these and other issues at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Monona is the founder and president of the organization Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety Incorporated and author of Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. It's published by Wiley. She teaches an art safety course for artists, educators, and safety professionals. She's also recently returned to her roots as a performer. She is bringing her cabaret act back to Feinstein's 54 Below on April 25th. And I'm very pleased to welcome Monona Russell back to our show. Hi.
Well, thank you.
The subtitle of your book seems particularly apt when we talk about vaping or e-cigarettes, since they haven't been around all that long. When did the first e-cigs come on the market?
It was a Chinese pharmacist in 2003 invented them, and they very, very quickly got onto the market. Of course, as all products with no testing whatever in terms of safety, but certainly in terms of efficacy, they certainly make smoke, and they do what they say they're going to do.
For those of our listeners who aren't vapers, can you explain what e-cigarettes are and how they work? And do they contain nicotine?
Well, if you've ever seen smoke machines in the theater world, that's what you have in your mouth, a little tiny theatrical
smoke. That's dry ice.
Oh, no, that's not usually. They are glycols or mineral oil mists. You're not breathing dry ice anymore. And once in a while, when you see the fog just lay on the stage, you know, like in Phantom, that may have a dry ice component. But mostly you're inhaling chemicals.
The people in the front rows are getting chemicals that they didn't. And they're paying more for those seats.
The theater. It doesn't matter where you are, even in the back. Because if you think the fog is going to stay on the stage, you know, you'd have to believe you can assign a swimming pool for peeing. I mean, a section of it for peeing. It's just going to go, the whole venue is going to be hazed or fogged.
Does every brand have its own formula?
Yes.
Are we talking about secret formulas here?
Yeah. When they first came out, I started to collect material safety data sheets on them. Now they're safety data sheets. And I've looked at the formulas. Now, there's a few that are trade secrets. Some of them, they tell you what they are, and they're the exact same basic chemicals as the fog machines. However, they're using the technology that we banned in smoke machines. They use hot wires. The battery heats up these little filament wires, these little nichrome wires, and causes it to, well, just on the edge of burning. And that's what gives you the fogging effect.
Do they also use formaldehyde?
Well, they create formaldehyde because when the glycol or the mineral oil burns or degrades, it's going to create a lot of aldehydes, not only formaldehyde, but acetaldehyde and acrolein and a number of other chemicals and all the other breakdown products. So you have gases being released, you have vapors being released, you have the mist, which you see, and you have particulate, all different sizes, including nanoparticles, and some of them of the metal in the nichrome wires.
So when we talk about secondhand smoke from cigarettes, should we also be talking about secondhand smoke from e-cigarettes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's much. If you put a gun to my head and said you got to, you know, inhale one of these, I would take the vaping. But
maybe cigarette smoking, you think, is safer?
No, cigarette smoking is not, because you're burning a leaf. And you're really burning it, so you get lots of combustion products. With this, you're getting less combustion products, but you're getting other chemicals. It's safer, but it's not anywhere near safe.
You said there were no studies conducted on their safety before they were approved for sale in this country?
There never has been on anything that has ever been released to the customer world, to the consumer world. It is far back as you want to go in history. Nothing has ever been studied for long-term toxicity before it is released to the public.
So when we have things like margarines that have dyes in them, should we assume that I don't want to pick on margarine. Okay, yeah, now, some food that has a
but you're talking a FDA, and I was talking consumers.
The FDA doesn't get involved in something like this?
They should, but they don't. The FDA deals primarily with food, drug, and cosmetics. So you're seeing that those kinds of things do have to have some pre-approval. But in terms of consumer products, no, nothing.
Do we know how many people are using are vaping these days?
There's different studies saying different things. The one that I looked at most recently coming out of the EU said that 12% of Europeans and 24% of U.S. citizens, no, that's the tattoo, sorry, are vaping. No, I don't have the amounts of, yes, I do. Somewhere between 20 and 11%, depending on what study, are vaping. Sorry about that.
Do you think that the people who smoke them are unconsciously volunteering for a study on whether they're safe or not?
No, but they we're getting a lot of data.
Well, there was a recent study by the CDC.
Yes, it was really shocking, because what they looked at was essentially 400,000 people. And of those, 66,000 were vapers, and the other 300 and something thousand were not. And they could really see the data. And 71% had a higher risk of stroke, which is consistent with inhaling tiny particulate. We know that now from firefighters, and we know that from the nanoparticle industry.
Stroke and heart disease as well.
Yeah, 59% had a greater risk of angina and heart attacks. Heart disease in 40. There's a difference between heart attacks and heart disease, because heart disease tells you that the heart itself has been damaged, that you have clogged arteries or other issues with the heart, and 40% higher risk of heart disease. And it is not keeping people from smoking cigarettes, because people who vape have twice the chance of actually going back to cigarettes.
What about lung cancer? Have there been any studies to determine whether, like cigarette smoking, vaping can be linked to lung cancer?
Well, we're going to have to wait longer, I think, for that. Because, the latency period is going to be from 5, 10, 15 years, and we've got about 10 years now. But it's kind of spotty, so it'll take some time before we can pull that data.
But you are saying, despite all of your misgivings, that if someone's a heavy cigarette smoker, switching to vaping might actually be something of an improvement. No,
not much of a one, but it isn't. Yeah, if you really are, if you got no willpower, maybe this is a temporary solution. But if when you look at the number of people who try vaping first and then go to cigarettes, you kind of wonder about that data too.
And a reminder that we will be taking your calls later. Our number 212-209-2877. Well, a lot of the people who are trying vaping now are teenagers who have not smoked cigarettes in the past, and now they're turning to e-cigs because they still want to have the the look of the sophistication of smoking?
Yeah, you have to really wonder what the answer is. I can see why you hesitated, because I can't figure out what they think they're doing either.
Well, I smoked for many years, unfortunately. And I smoked because the girls in college that I dated smoked. So I bought cigarettes, and then eventually I started smoking. And then those relationships broke up, but I was stuck with a habit for many years. Eventually, luckily, I quit, and I'm very happy I did. But there are all sorts of reasons that people start smoking, mostly social, I would think.
Yeah, probably. I to me, it's just peculiar. I can't really relate to it. I know that that's the way people think, and I guess it's because I wasn't raised in an ordinary way, that I don't see peer pressure. I don't understand it. I can say that I've seen it, but I don't really understand it in my kishkis, my insides.
The CDC reported that in 2018, more than 3.6 million young people in the United States, including 1 in 5 high school students, were using e-cigarettes. That's a lot.
I've seen that data, and then I've seen 11% rather than the 20% you just cited. So I'm not sure, but it's a lot of kids.
Well, when will we really know? Would we need long-term studies the way we did with cigarettes?
Yes.
And find out whether people who smoked them for 20 years or 30 years are destroying their lungs and their bodies?
Well, yes, and you realize that once there's a nice pile of data against vaping, then the vaping industry will start to put some research money into the other side and create more doubt. So that's why it took 40 years before we had data that we could say securely cigarettes cause cancer. So
people still smoke them.
And people are going to play with this data too. So it's going to take a long, long time before there's solid data. But there's enough for me to say, yeah, it's ridiculous to do this.
Well, when I smoked, cigarettes were not all that expensive, and now they're very expensive, and supposedly that has had an impact on the rate of cigarette smoking. What about vaping?
Well, vaping will have the same thing that the cigarettes do. That once you're hooked, if you get the type of vaping the type of e-cigarette that has nicotine in it, because we were using the non-nicotine ones for stage smoking when we absolutely had to have something. And not inhaling, but, you know, to get the look.
You mean when you were in showbiz?
Well, no, I work with the unions, and that was something that we would allow because it was a little bit safer, at least. Because there's some scripts where the cigarette is kind of like part of the action and part of the wording, so you really are stuck with it. So in that case, once you become addicted to the nicotine, now you have a serious difficulty in getting off of this habit.
Should we take a call?
So why not?
Okay. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm holding in my hand a transitional smoke substitute. You know, it's for drinks. I could get apple cider, or it's rolled cinnamon sticks. They're about the right width and length of a cigarette. You get some of those instead of a cigarette. Pick one of those up and chew on it. In other words, no, I'm serious. It stimulates. It's satisfying to your tongue. It's kind of, you fidget it with your hands. It's a good substitute. If you need a transition to wean yourself off cigarettes, buy cinnamon sticks.
Since you're really kind of obviously smart and you're thinking about things, I'm going to give you a little exercise.
Go ahead.
Look up what the actual chemical in cinnamon is, the active flavoring. And then once you have the name of that chemical and got it accurate, then do a search. And you'll find out.
Is it pretty dangerous?
It's quite toxic. Most of the spices and things that we like are actually quite toxic. We love a little bit of toxicity.
A little bit is okay.
We like to flirt with death when we eat. I mean, pepper is really nasty. I've never thought pain was a flavor, but a lot of people do. So, you know, some of these...
Or chilies.
Some of these chemicals are quite toxic, and some of them are actually potential cartoons.
And don't forget that cinnamon is very close to Cinnerman.
Well, you know, it looks good, and there's no secondhand cinnamon, so no one will complain at the neighboring table.
That's true. That's true. There's no secondhand cinnamon.
Thank you so much for your call.
Sure thing.
My guest is Monona Russell. We are talking about, we were talking about vaping, and I'm going to move on to tattooing in just a moment, but we got another call, I think, about vaping. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Leonard, and good afternoon to your guests. I guess I'm in a situation where I'm a parent, 5 kids, and my second oldest daughter is both a tattooer and a vapor.
My sympathies.
yeah, I know. And I feel as if...
You may want to call back again later after we've talked about tattooing.
I've gotten to the psychological end of it, because I know that when I've told her about it, first she started with one, then she did the whole arm, and now she's got the other arm going. And I said, listen, Raisa, tattooing is an addiction. The needle, the pain, all of this stuff is part of an addictive process. The whole thing with the vaping, she never smoked a cigarette in her life, but she works as a bartender. And so that scene actually creates, because you can't smoke anymore in there, so it actually creates a kind of atmosphere where you have smoke but non-smoke. And I'm trying to get to her to tell her that this stuff is really unhealthy and it doesn't make a difference. And I think that actually when we fight against it, especially with young folks, it actually encourages that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
So I've just left it alone. And, you know, this is what I'm calling to say. It's almost like, you know, you can put the information out there, but you really can't fight the horses out the barn. And I think just giving the information is good, but I really believe that the horse is out of the barn on this one.
You're absolutely right. When I teach classes on toxicity and other things for having to do with occupational health, what I do on the tattoo area, since we're learning a lot about pigments and things, I say, if you don't have one, for heaven's sake, don't get one. But if you do, thank you for your service, because that data is getting compiled. I don't know what else to do.
But you know what? Maybe that comment is just something that part of a study. You know, just non-judgmental saying it. Thank you for your data and your input in this. That's a good one. That's a real good one. I'm going to try that one with her.
Lots of
luck. You might also have her listen to the podcast of the show.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Ed, the show is... Thank you for calling. The show is Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Monona, the oldest evidence of human tattoos is believed to be from around 3300 B.C. Otzi, the Iceman, had it.
Yes.
So should we know a lot about the effects of tattoos on health?
No, it just tells us that people were dumb all along from the very beginning of time.
We're talking about 5,300 years.
What about sticking something under your skin that is a good idea? I mean, it just... If we were doing this to rats... PETA would be all over us, and yet we have millions of people putting pigments under their skin, and we're learning a great deal about these pigments, but it's a big, massive, uncontrolled experiment.
For a long time, it was seen mainly among men and in certain social groups, sailors, prison inmates, gang members. When did it become a fashion trend for young people, male and female?
Well, I knew the man who was doing the studies in Hawaii of the sailors way back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And he's still around. He's retired, but he's at Mount Sinai now. He's still a dermatologist. But I've been following that data all along. And back then, I mean, we did see cancers arising on occasion within tattoos and so on. There were little clues, but the sample of people was very, very small. In around 2000, it became really, really popular. The last tattooed lady in a circus lost her job in 1990. So after that, we didn't see much of that attitude toward it. We began to see acceptance more and more.
It wasn't an oddity. It was a unique thing to see a tattooed lady. There are a lot of tattooed ladies. In fact, didn't one study find that 40% of Americans have at least one tattoo?
Yes, it looks like that. It's quite amazing. And again, this is an experiment you could never get out of, because if you try to laser them, all you're doing is breaking them down into smaller particles so they can migrate into the rest of your body.
So erasing them is not really erasing them. It's simply putting them further into your body.
Yeah.
Do we know what most tattoo inks are made of?
Well, you know, the only people really, really looking at this is the people at the European Union. ETCHA has sponsored a number of studies. They now know there's about 100 different colorants that are used in tattoos. None of them were, of course, ever originally thought of to stick under your damn skin. And none of them were approved for that. There's been, you know, no special pigments just for tattoos. They've been using them from the paint industry and from other cosmetics industry. And remember, EPA approves no pigments, either by inhalation, which is a big problem for airbrush makeup, but certainly not for under the skin.
I have to wonder what Otzi, the ink that Otzi used, because we've been, as I said, people have been tattooed for the last 5 or 6 millennia.
Well, if you look at the early tattoos in the Polynesian islands and all, it was almost surely charcoal from burning it. And
is charcoal, isn't charcoal inert?
Well, you're burning an organic material, which, you know, as you know, that's what kills you in the cigarettes, is you're burning a leaf. And so when you burn wood or you burn anything else, you're getting the carbon, but you're also getting a whole bunch of carcinogens. And as a result, one of the big problems in carbon black pigments is the presence of aromatic cyclic hydrocarbons. So we just know, and now there's actual studies of skin where they can isolate the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that have migrated around the tattoo into the skin. So it's almost impossible to get carbon that's so pure that it doesn't have any of these impurities from burning the carbon.
We used to see tattoos that were mainly blue, black, and red, but lately multicolored tattoos have become popular, and they cover the full rainbow. Are these using new tattoo inks?
The sailors did that too way back. They were using things like cinnabar, which was mercuric sulfide. They were using cadmium. They were using
cadmium is a poison.
From your lips to God's ears.
Well, artists, painters now are avoiding cadmium red because. My favorite red, it was the best red out there.
Oh, yeah, it's a great
red. But it was a good way to kill yourself.
Yeah, we're still working on that. I mean, because we're now...
Can you still buy cadmium reds?
Sure. You can buy arsenic pigments if you know where to get them.
Wow.
Yeah, on the internet. You betcha. Beautiful. Oh, my God.
So they're not regulated by the FCC, FDC or other governmental agencies?
All countries, including ours, exempt art materials from the consumer paint lead laws and cadmium laws. And that's because you need a pigment that is going to last for hundreds of years. And so if you want that, you're going to be using those kinds of metal-containing pigments.
So before oil paints came along and changed painting, they were doing egg-based tempera paints. Were tempers better, or is it really
same
the pigments.
Pigment? That... Identical pigments. The only difference was they used egg as the binder instead of oil. They were using the same pigments. As soon as these pigments were invented, and they were the bad ones were invented very early on because they were very spectacular,
Well, there's zinc, which is not good for us also.
Zinc white. Yeah. Well, no, zinc white is not so bad. We replaced it with titanium, which is a lung carcinogen, and of course, the lead white, which is still popular. So, I mean, but these are the metal pigments. They are also using the organics, the azo. The European study found that 80% of the inks are not these metal pigments. They are azo organic pigments, and those, a significant portion of them break down to release known carcinogens under ultraviolet light. So if you've got them next to your skin, you are definitely creating carcinogens right there.
And you teach, as I said earlier, an art safety course for artists and other professionals, people in theater as well, who would use these things. What's their response when you tell them that?
Well, fortunately, you know, mostly I'm teaching people who want to take this up as a field. Industrial hygienists that want to specialize in art and theater. Art and theater technology people and teachers who want to add a component of rational thinking to their training and to understand how to meet the OSHA and EPA regulations that are applicable to their work and so on. So mostly I'm talking in that course to people who already understand that there's an issue.
Well, how far can we go with this? People use charcoal for drawings. They use lead pencils. Are they also bad for us?
Well, see,
they're creating dust, aren't they?
Lead pencils are graphite, and it's not very toxic. You have to really snort a lot of it to have a problem. No, I don't care if people want to use cadmium, to tell you the truth. I don't care if they want to use it, but they need to know how to use it and how not to get exposed to it. You see, the secret is no one was ever killed by anything they weren't exposed to it. So if you can use a chemical with, for instance, if the paint goes from the tube to the palette to the brush to the canvas, you didn't have an exposure.
Mm. But if you put your finger in your mouth.
But you put your finger, or you smear it with your hand, or you spill a little on the floor and you walk it around, now you got cadmium all through your house in fine particle form. You have to be, and this is really frightening to artists, neat and clean if you're going to use these safely.
Because the tattoo ink is basically injected into the skin, can tattoo inks be considered drugs?
No, but they certainly can be considered, you know, an administration of a toxic material. It's if you were doing this, you would do the same thing in subcutaneous form if you were testing a chemical on an animal. I mean, you know.
Are tattoo parlors monitored by the health department?
For things like clean needles and infectious diseases and following sanitary procedures. But there is.
So they have to sterilize their needles.
Yeah, they're supposed to do that. There were a number of tattoo parlors associated with outbreaks of various diseases, especially in the early days. So you have to be very, you know, savvy if you're going to go to one of these places, you know, in terms of infectious things too. You don't want a needle that's been used on somebody else being used on you. Sterilization is very difficult. They really should be throwing away the needles between people.
But they obviously don't always.
Well, you don't. The good ones do.
My guest is Monona Russell, whose book, Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. It's published by Wiley. And we are inviting your calls to 212-209-2877 if you'd like to speak to her about any of the things that we've been discussing or your concerns about other environmental issues. That's 212-209-2877. Industrial hygienist Monona Russell, and a reminder that you can join the conversation if you give us a call at 212-209-2877. Monona, there's also something called permanent makeup. Is that a kind of tattoo or just something that's applied on top of the skin?
No, it's exactly the same thing as a tattoo. They use a micro needle, a very small needle. They can sketch eyebrows on you. They can put permanent eyeliner on you. They can get your lips a nice color and give you a nice firm lip line.
If you have thin lips, you now can have full lips.
Well, no, that's when they put gel underneath and pump them up. But this would be color on the surface.
What about the gels?
Well,
you're not a fan of those either?
Well, they will migrate in the body also, and we don't know exactly their final fate. But there is one good use for that particular type of tattooing, and that is if somebody's born with, say, a white spot that doesn't have any pigment in it, or there's a cosmetic problem that is a birth defect or something, they can blend things in and make it look better.
Are they using the same kinds of inks that are used in tattoos?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
We want to take a call?
Sure.
Okay. WBAI, you're on the air. Speak to Monona Russell.
Hi. I love your show, Leonard, on any station. You're the best.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway,
I love you as a listener, too.
Thank you. I'm an actress, and I do a cable show on television, and I have to wear very thick cream base, several layers of it, then pat it down with baby powder. And I leave it on for like 12 hours. And I do this a lot. And I've been a proud smoker for 51 years now. And I was wondering...
Wait, let me stop you for a second. A proud smoker for 51 years. Now, when you started hearing that cancer, that smoking was linked to cancer, it didn't stop you at all? Didn't make you...
I can top that. My father died of lung cancer. No, because I feel... Something's going to get you, and a lot of the pollution in the air is probably doing more. So many people who have never smoked get lung cancer. So you can't really say, well, smoking did it, when, you know, we're awash in chemicals and bad air and God knows what else.
Well, actually, you can. Because just imagine if the pollution in the air was as thick as the smoke that you're breathing out of your mouth. If it was... Well, we would be in really big trouble. We wouldn't even be able to see across the street.
Well, so,
we'd be in London
100
years ago.
Yeah, so it's about dose. The dose makes the poison. So if you're breathing the cigarette smoke in, you're getting this huge, massive dose of pollution, and you're setting it up for yourself.
But meanwhile, she's calling about the makeup. Is that an issue?
The makeup, yes. That's what worries me, and there's no way around it, you know? High-definition television.
I was wearing makeup when I was 3 years old. I had a.
I was seven.
I was a. I had a union card. I was AGVA by age three, so I've been a performer all my life. And I never would go out on the street with my bare face hanging out.
I don't either.
It doesn't have anything to do with longevity, and I am a very old broad. So I a lot older than you, I'm assured. The makeup is not my worry. My worry is what you're snorting.
Okay, thank you so much, and you're the best, Leonard. I'm always a Leonard fan.
Thank you so much. I hope we're a bit addictive at times. Is that bad for your health?
Why not?
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Yes.
Your guest mentioned... combustion byproducts from burning organic materials. I don't know if she can answer this question, but I'm wondering if that business of those byproducts being carcinogenic would apply to something like frankincense.
Absolutely. There's a study of Polish churches where they used the incense sensors and the numbers of carcinogens in the air. So that's actually been studied. It doesn't matter what you burn, whether you burn coal, wood, oil, cigarettes, or any other leaf you might take it into your head to burn, it will all cause cancer because that's what happens when you burn an organic material. It's with incense, it's with candles. Anytime you're burning anything in the house, you're not doing your air quality any good.
Candles?
Candles, yes, I know. There's lots of studies of candles. Really interesting ones. Some of them government and done well because wax, when it burns, gives off the same kinds of stuff. It's a long organic molecule.
Does the EPA, has the EPA been told this?
The EPA did some of the studies, yes, they do know.
Go ahead.
Does it make a difference if you are burning the frankincense in charcoal or if you use an electric burner that just basically melts it and releases the scent into the air?
Machst nichts. Doesn't matter. As soon as you're burning, I don't care how you burn it. The only way that you get less pollution is if you were in a 3,000-degree muffle furnace with forced oxygen. Because in that case, you would create mostly the carbon products and the nitrogen products and so on, and you wouldn't be getting all the carcinogens. But as soon as it's any kind of ordinary burning, you're getting all of them.
Oh, wow. Okay, thank you for answering my question.
Yeah, thank you, I think.
And now you're scaring me because I like to barbecue.
Well, yes, and there's been plenty of studies of the stuff that's on the nice char on the meat. It's those are carcinogens. Yep.
And when you're standing over a barbecue with all that charcoal and breathing in that air, there's causing yourself some serious lung damage.
There's studies of Chinese women who cook over charcoal fires and their rates of lung cancer. So yes, it's a well known thing, and here again, you know, I mean, I do some things that aren't so hot too. I mean, because sometimes you say to yourself that risk is worth it for me because I really enjoy that or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, you have to go through life. But don't kid yourself. If it's burning and it's organic, you're creating cancer-causing substances.
What about when you're just cooking in the house and the smoke alarm goes off?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, boy. Our number here is 212-209-2877. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question. I only heard a few moments of your program, but it sparked a question, and I was glad that you guys are open. A few years ago, I took a friend of mine, and I was with a friend of mine, and she wanted to get a tattoo. I was like, okay, she's a young lady, and I said, it's okay, I'm not going to let you go by yourself, and I went with her. But the next day, she got really sick, and I wanted to know, was that an issue? Because a long time ago, before tattoos were even popular, a friend of mine went with her, and she got a tattoo, and now she called me. Actually, she's in her first of chemo for melanoma. She was never a person to lay in the sun, but I didn't know whether there's been any studies of diseases that were people who have tattoos.
Now, when you say she got sick, did she have an infection, or do you think
fever. She had a fever the next day.
Would she have been allergic to tattoo ink?
Some
melanoma?
Of them are allergic, but some of them
know.
Also
her
she could have gotten.
I can tell you that was her first tattoo. Both of them, it was their first tattoo.
She could have gotten Hep A. She could have gotten a lot of things. There's just so many possibilities, but a number of people get sick after they get tattoos, and some of them have also skin rashes and other responses. People don't want to talk about it, but a significant number of people do have reactions right after getting a tattoo.
So are they allergic?
Some of them are allergic. And now the substance that you're allergic to is under your skin, and there is no way to get it out. That's a really big problem.
Okay. Our number two, we have another call. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Speak to Manona Russell.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
You're confused because we're on slight delay and you're hearing your radio and you're hearing the phone at the same time. So turn off your radio for the moment. Okay?
I did. Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to ask, I saw a young lady in the bank, and she had this elaborate tattoo, and she seemed of East Asian persuasion, and I asked her about it, and she says, no, it's not a tattoo, it's a henna drawing. And I was wondering, are these safe?
They're a lot safer. That's been a process has been done for many, many years. It's a strong dye. It's the same dye we use for hair dye. And they will do it on their skin, and it will stain that skin for quite a while. But it will grow off, and it will be gone.
And the hair dyes are okay?
Well, they've got issues, but they're compared to what we're talking about, they're minor.
Okay. Thank you for your call. A few years ago, there was a news article about a woman who had cervical cancer, and scans showed that she had multiple metastases. But when those areas were examined, they turned out to be tattoo inks that had migrated Is this a common problem, tattoo inks migrating from the tattoo sites to other parts of the body?
You're talking about the very first study that really alerted medical professionals to this problem. 40% of the ink that goes under your skin does not stay there. It migrates, and most of it ends up going to your lymph nodes. And those lymph nodes become slightly swollen, and that stuff, that those pigments hang out there, and they light up on a contrast CT scan. So this woman had her lymph nodes removed when they really didn't need to be removed.
Can they go to other internal organs?
Oh, yeah, but it looks like the major deposition area is the lymph nodes.
Well, because the lymph nodes capture all of the toxins in the body.
Right.
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air, speaking to Monona Russell.
Hi, folks. good show. I hate to be a naysayer, but I just wanted to point out that I just recently heard that they found cancer in a dinosaur fossil. And I would argue that it's not things that we take in that are causing the cancer. It's a biological process, in my view. And I love my tattoos. And we found tattoos on the Iceman. Thank you.
Mentioned that we found a tattoo on the Iceman, who, by the way,
on the Iceman
died.
Yeah, and we wouldn't know that, you know, we wouldn't know that stuff, you know, and he didn't die from it. So
we're under ultraviolet light. The Earth is slightly radioactive. We've been dealing with burning campfires from the beginning that create carcinogens. Of course you're going to see cancer, no matter where you look or how far back.
Yep.
There's always been cancer. The problem is the rate. What is happening?
You're saying you're exacerbating the situation other things.
Yes, and the biggest increase in rate is in childhood cancers. That is so awful. We're really creating a mess.
I think it's more to do with the environment that we're living in that's causing it than the attack on our immune systems from that than what we're doing to ourselves.
Well, we can't blame that dinosaur's cancer on Donald Trump. So, the cancer has always been around, but that doesn't mean that every dinosaur was suffering from cancer. It means one in a
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, thank you for your call. We have more call. Yeah. Okay, let's take another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad what you said before about the cancer. Candles and incense. I can't stand it. It drives me nuts. And I got a new thing you could add to all this toxic. The nail polish, I look at it, I want to scream. It's so toxic, some of those chemicals. And one last thing, the cinnamon.
Yeah? What about the cinnamon?
What happened to her?
We lost her.
No, she's back.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. What about the cinnamon?
It's good for low blood sugar and viruses, and it makes me feel really, really good, organic.
Well, most medicines have side effects. So if you look up what it is, you'll see that it is not without side effects. And some of those are toxic symptoms.
As we see on those television commercials where three-quarters of the commercial for a drug these days is the side effects, which can lead to all sorts of things, depression, suicide, hepatitis, you name it.
Yeah, everything has good and bad. There is nothing that is just all good. So,
well, thank you for your call. You mentioned the European Union. Hasn't it moved to restrict the sale of some of the tattoo inks?
They're working on it. They haven't really done it yet. And what they're looking at is finding ways to control some of the well-known pigments that are organic that definitely break down to release carcinogens.
But can I assume that some tattoo inks are perfectly benign?
No, it's a foreign substance. If you stick anything foreign under your skin, your body wants to remove it. So, you know, there's always some downside to it. but I would certainly prefer those kinds of things to be under that are essentially inert than the ones that break down into known carcinogens.
Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I don't know if your guest can answer my question. I'll hang up and listen. So I work in a school, and unfortunately, I've seen that a lot of teachers, principals are bringing in these perfumes that you plug into the wall, whatever they're, you know, Glade, Procter, whatever. And I've tried to make them aware with literature from NRDC, et cetera, that this is not good. So the children as young as 3 are breathing this in all day. Your guest mentioned childhood cancers, and I just thought, what does she think about these perfumes? The constant barrage of perfumes, artificial fragrances in the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a ton of information saying how bad an idea that is. And it not on the basis of cancer, but on the basis of asthma and allergies. It's amazing the number of students that already are sensitized to things like those various fragrances. So they really should be a fragrance-free area. School, that makes no sense to be adding fragrances.
Before you go, I'd like to ask about some of your other activities. As we said, you've been teaching an art safety course for a few years now at the University of Massachusetts Amherst.
Yes.
Do you teach it mostly during the summer?
I teach it for 40-hour. It's a 40-hour course in each summer. I'm endowing the program, so I'm identifying people who will be able to teach it after I'm, you know, croaked, which is probably next week, the way it's going here.
Well, don't have any tattoos.
No.
You've convinced me that it's not a good idea. Teachers can take it after the school year ends.
Yes, that's the purpose of that. And union people, theatrical union people, usually that's a time that's kind of down. There's a number of reasons to do it then.
So you say, professional artists, theater professionals, teachers.
Anyone who's truly interested. If what I say is of interest to you and you recognize the science background, I mean, I have a degree in chemistry and years experience. But and I'm an industrial hygienist, but this is not myth. You know, there's solid material backup. If you've got a little bit of math skills, a little bit of science background, this is a field. Because I have so much work, I've never even advertised. I've never had to do any outreach, and I make a very, very good living.
So how can listeners find out more about your course?
Oh, they could contact me, or they could look at the University of Massachusetts and look up art safety summer course August. And if there's any difficulty, if you know how to spell my name, you shouldn't have any trouble finding me.
So spell your name.
M-O-N-O-N-A, and the last name is like Russell, only with O's, R-O-S-S-O-L.
We're going to slip one more call in here. And then I want to ask you about your cabaret act. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Okay.
Tell me something. When you guys going to have a program about the vaccine and, like, get 2 people, one from the vaccine and one against the vaccine, and let us listen so we can make a decision?
What vaccine are you talking about?
Any vaccine. Don't get one person from the vaccine company. Get like 2 people and let us listen to you guys.
Wait. You're confusing this show with the Gary Null show. I have not spoken about vaccines on this show.
No. I'm not confusing anything. I'm just saying, just like you get everybody else, can you get somebody? Can you do that too?
Well, we'll see. We'll talk about it here. But thank you so much for your call. Now, Monona, as I said, you've also been performing a cabaret act at Feinstein's 54 Below at 254 West 54th Street. That's situated right below Studio 54. Is that the basement of Studio 54?
Yes. Oh, gosh, it's a gorgeous club. If you haven't seen it, you really need to come down. It's a beautiful, beautiful club. The best venue I've ever played, and I've been in some real dumps over the years.
How old were you when you started?
3.
You were a child performer?
Yes. My parents were in vaudeville, and we booked out of Chicago, and we toured all my growing years.
So you're calling this show Vaudeville 101? explaining what vaudeville was like? Do people not know what vaudeville was like?
They really didn't, and especially because in New York, vaudeville died very early, but in the Midwest, it didn't. It went right through the 50s.
We had the Palace Theater in New York, and that was a lot of fun to go to, but then one day it just... acts stopped coming.
When movies came in, it just really died here. But there were acts booking all through the 40s and 50s, all through the country.
And what kind of act did you and your parents do?
My father was a rather well-known vaudeville magician, an escape artist, won the Houdini Trophy 3 times in a row, wrote books. It's a very interesting life.
And then you disappeared? Is that what happened?
Oh, I've disappeared. I've floated. I've been sawed in half.
But you didn't do any song and dance.
That's what I did. That was my spot. Uh-huh. I sang. I was an acrobat. I did, of course, I was a magician's assistant as well, stooged. You know, back then you did everything. You know, whatever was needed, you did it.
And is the act a kind of combination of entertainment and telling people about what happened in the past? Kind of educative?
Because it's Feinstein's and they have the long tradition of the American songbook, what I've taken is some of the most famous composers that are represented in the American songbook and sung some things from their earlier days, things that didn't quite make it into the American songbook. And I set them up so that people can understand what they were. And some of them are hysterically funny. And we just have a really good time.
You told me before we went on the air that Yip Harburg is one of your particular favorites.
He was such a great lyricist. Yeah, we actually hung out a little bit together, and he was a wonderful, wonderful lyricist. And I do one number of lyrics that were never published that he wrote.
They were never published?
They were never published. They were considered too risque at the time. But one of the songs that he published with Harold Arlen has words that he described as a concession to public taste. But he gave me the real lyrics, and I sing them.
And you can't say them on the air even now?
Well, yes, you could, but that would kill my act.
Ah, I don't want to give anything away. Your next performance will be on April 25th.
At 7 o'clock.
And are tickets always available?
Yeah, you can go on the site or, just look at the schedule and scroll down to April 25th, and you should see the whole bill for that day, and I'm at the 7 o'clock slot.
So the obvious question is, how did you go from being a kid in vaudeville, and I don't know how long you were in it, to becoming an industrial hygienist?
Lots of schooling.
initially, I imagine if you were traveling from city to city, school was a problem.
Well, we were in and out of school, and I didn't really take school seriously until I left home at 17 and forged my parents' signature on an application for the University of Wisconsin. And then I went through pre-med, and I got a degree in chemistry and a Master of Science and a Master of Fine Arts, minored in music, still made money, still was booking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I finished with 3 degrees and enough money to write a check for the farm I bought.
And here you are now on Leonard Lopate at Large.
Oh, that's the big thrill of my life.
Thank you, as always, for being on our show. We'll see you in about a month and a half, maybe 2 months from now.
If I'm still here, I'm yours.
I think you'll still be here. And that brings us to the end of today's show. My great thanks to Monona Russell, to Barbara Kahn, who produced today's segment, to Charlie Morrow, who composed our theme music, to Reggie Johnson, who was at the audio controls, and to my executive producer, Jesse Lent. Leonard Lopate at Large comes to you on Saturdays at 4 and Tuesdays at noon. You can subscribe to Leonard Lopate at Large podcast on iTunes and by clicking on Robin Hood Radio's archive program site, which is robinhoodradio.com. You can also check out Leonard Lopate at Large Facebook page. We hope to see you next week.